Senate Finance will come to order.
With me at the table today is Senator Bundy, Hoffman, Senator Olson,
Chairman.
Senator Dyson, and Senator Stedman will be by back, and Co-Chair Wilkin and myself, Senator Green. And we have the pleasure today from hearing from some of the departments on the capital budget. And first on the list is university. And I understand that Mark Hamilton is online, and is Pat Pitney online as well? Okay. And then Pete Kelly is here in the room. Mark Hamilton?
Yes, ma'am.
Welcome.
I'd like to take the opportunity to talk about the capital budget associated with the University of Alaska. I think you're well aware that the Board of Regents this year focused their efforts on the deferred arena. And as a matter of fact, as their very first priority, listed $98 million of the highest priority areas in maintaining our existing facilities and equipment. The governor's bills, actually, two of them, the regular and the deferred maintenance capital bills, included about $44 million toward those particular efforts. The university has historically requested about $50 million in capital funds for maintaining existing facilities over the time that I have been here. We have had appropriated an average of about $7 million. Now, at the same time, we have gotten new facilities that have averaged about $20 million annually. The consistent lack of R&R funding since 1999 has resulted in a deferred maintenance list for UA that is really unacceptable. We grew from about $200 million in deferred maintenance in FY 99, which was a reasonable number, but have been unable to maintain that. So we're now looking at a maintenance bill, a deferred maintenance bill of about $400 million. And that's exactly why the board, the $98 million in maintaining existing facilities and equipment is their number one list item. I would mention two other areas that are very important. We have a kind of historic budget anomaly. I'm sure you are aware of dozens and dozens of these things, but the one I want to concentrate on today is the Small Business Development Center. This has been consistently funded through the university and in the capital budget. Now, this is a very, very important effort for small businesses statewide. For the 550,000 that is requested for SBDC, we draw $2.1 million in matching federal grants. This is an area where arguably it shouldn't even be in the university, but that's not the issue. It's a terribly important thing, especially as the state tries to develop itself economically toward the potential gas pipeline boom. The other issue that is a bit more complicated to talk through, but let me try, is the science facilities. The integrated science facility at UAA has been under budget request for 6 years. It was partially funded last year. We're looking for the funding to complete that structure. As we have increased courses in the health arena, frankly, as we have attracted more and more of Alaska's brightest students with the UA Scholars Program, they've been interested in biology and in science, and we absolutely don't have the facilities at UAA to take care of those. Similarly, at Fairbanks, in what has been referred to as BICS in the past, the Biological Science Facility, this is essential to get this program going. That, too, that was funded partially in 2002 with a GO bond, but needs to be completed. The second phase of that needs to be done now. We're at a critical point in the future of the University of Alaska, especially at Fairbanks, in pursuing the potential of the International Polar Year effort that will actually last for 2 years, 2007 to 2009. This is an area that comes up. International Polar Years happen every 50 years. The last one we had actually created the Geophysical Institute up here. So this maps the kind of research opportunities for the next 50 years. We are pulling out all stops on this from our perspective. We have recently made offers to 15 postdoc students from all over the world. We got 180 applicants for those positions. These are quite literally the best and the brightest in Arctic sciences from the entire world. We have an opportunity here as America's Arctic University to pave our way towards those precious federal grants that this year we believe will be about $440 million worth. I think you're very well aware that when you get the sheet that talks about general fund and then over there has the non-general fund piece, that non-general fund piece is calculated on, at least in large part, on the existing quality of your facilities and labs. And at this stage of the game, Fairbanks needs to have this BICS to qualify for many, many of those opportunities. So science facilities are the future, both in the minds of our students and in the minds of the efforts of the International Polar Year, looking at the kind of so what of climate change. So those are our kind of our new facilities. I think the governor's bill recognized that we needed to get on this deferred maintenance list. The board certainly recognized it, and that's why that is our number one priority. However, if you decide to build new facilities, sciences are the future, both at Anchorage and at Fairbanks. That would conclude my formal remarks to you, Chair Green, and I'd stand by for any questions you might have.
President Hamilton, I just wanted to be sure that the idea of the tobacco bonds being the vehicle for many of those projects, and in addition to the regular capital budget, and that's included in our plan. And if I didn't make that clear, then I'm sorry. So, but I think that includes the integrated science facility in Anchorage. And I don't think it includes the BICS building at this time. So that's for another conversation. But anyway, thanks for your comments. Anything else?
Madam Chair.
Oh, Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. President Hamilton, thanks for joining us this morning. I saw, and I left it in my office because I thought we were going to get it. Do we have a chart that shows deferred maintenance back from 1988?
I don't believe it's back quite that far. We had a chart that went from FY95.
Maybe Madam Chair, could we ask Pete, do you have that chart for us?
When I have a chart here, and we also had turned a chart into your office last night, so I'm not sure if that...
Okay.
So...
Okay.
That's fine.
You might want to give it to Rose, and that if she could make copies for us, that would be great. Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah. We have quite a stack of papers in the office right now, so it could be there and be on top, and we might not realize it. Anything else, Pete? Okay, thank you. Anything else, Senator Wilkin?
No, ma'am. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Department of Law?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Catherine Doughty.
Kathleen, you may want to take the mic and bring it just a little bit closer. Thank you.
For the record, Madam Chair, Catherine Doughty, Administrative Services Director from the Department of Law, and with me this morning, is Craig Tillery.
Deputy Attorney General for the Department of Law.
And your name again?
Craig Tillery.
Craig Tillery. Thank you very much.
I just have a couple of quick items. Very briefly, there is another round of judgments and claims that needs to be included in an appropriations vehicle somewhere along the line, and I just wanted to bring that to your attention that it is not currently in this version of Senate Bill 231, and the total on that is, I believe, 3.67 million and in general funds and about 2,800 in non-general funds that are needed for judgments and claims for fiscal year 2006. And also,
did you say 3.6?
It's 3.6.
Thank you.
Seven. And also, we are requesting a lapse date extension on our oil and gas appropriation that was included in the Energy Fast Track Supplemental that was passed a little while ago. The reason for that is a couple of those big oil, gas, and gas cases that we talked to you about at the time that we testified on the Fast Track have been delayed into fiscal year 2007. So we would like a lapse date extension on that appropriation to include fiscal year 2007.
Anything else?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, again, this is Craig Tillery, Deputy Attorney General. You should also have received a letter, and I don't believe it's in the CS at this point, requesting a total of $800,000 to the Department of Law in two separate appropriations of approximately $400,000 each. These appropriations are for purposes of asserting a claim, if one is to be asserted, under the Exxon Valdez oil spill settlement for a under what is known as a reopener provision. That is a provision that allows the state and federal governments to come back in at any time between essentially the September of 2002 and September of 2006, and so we're coming up on the end of that now, and ask Exxon to pay up to an additional $100 million to restore a population, species, or habitat that received substantial injury from the oil spill, and that injury has to be something that was not known and could not have been known at the time of the settlement. The governments have been working on that for a number of years. This legislature has funded our work for several years on that. Right now, the way that works and the reason we're here now is that the claim would actually be asserted in September, but a decision to assert it has to be made at the end of May. The governments have not currently made a decision as to whether to assert a claim. But the way it is triggered is by providing Exxon with detailed project plans for projects that we would ask them to do under the reopener provision. Once we do that, if they decline, then there will likely be a court fight over it. And the purpose of this money would be to prepare us for such a court battle and to help to perfect those claims. We don't know, as I said, right now whether we will assert those claims, and for that reason, the language is contingent, essentially saying that the appropriation is contingent upon a decision, which would be, again, come at the end of May, to proceed with the assertion of a claim in September under the reopener provision. And that's...
Are there any questions? Okay, and what did you say that amount was?
It is set out in two separate things. The first is approximately $400,000. It asks for the unappropriated and unobligated monies out of the original Exxon Valdez oil spill criminal restitution monies. Mm-hmm. We've looked at looking at the amount that's accrued to date this year, projecting that out through the end of next fiscal year, which is the way we phrase this, we anticipate it will be about $400,000. The second leg of this is an appropriation of general funds for $400,000.
Is any of this going to be in the supplemental?
No. All of the money is right here for this purpose.
Okay, but it's in the 07 capital budget.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Okay, Catherine, Craig, thank you very much for being here today. Appreciate your presentation. Department of Administration. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair. My name is Scott Nordstrand. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Administration. I'm joined by Eric Swanson, my Director of Administrative Services, who will help me with the details if I get lost. But we have a few things we'd like to talk about in the capital budget, but I'd first like to say thank you for what we're not talking about.
Mm-hmm.
We have, the committee's been very generous to our department, in particularly in some areas of technology that has been mission critical, I believe, and we want to thank you for that. There are a couple of issues we would like to discuss. I would begin with the PBF deferred maintenance projects element. There's been a fund shift of we requested $5.5 million in GF toward deferred maintenance, and
could you direct this to a page? Do you have a page number here?
That's page 2, line 22.
Thank you.
Page 2, line 22. Pull up my page list here. In essence, what, as I understand, the effect of this change is to request that the department use the PBF rate source of funding to fund the total of the $8 million rather than obtain any general funds for that purpose. That will have the effect of slowing down the available funds for deferred maintenance. It will take us, I think, perhaps 3 years to accumulate that $5.5 million and be able to have it available for projects. This really is essentially a policy call. How much money do we want to put in the pipeline to help on deferred maintenance? We have a list, and we provided to you, of the projects that are involved. They total $29 million of deferred maintenance, things that need to get fixed, and we've got them in a sort of a triage priority. And as I think we discussed in the past here, that the priority actually can change day to day as something bad happens. And so we've got our best estimate of $29 million, and this would allow us to get that money in the pipeline sooner. That's that request. The second thing I'd like to mention has to do with the ETS infrastructure CIP. We'd requested about $5.5 million. We had hoped to be able to obtain some additional funds from other departments towards the effort, particularly the effort in the Microsoft conversion. I think you're familiar by now of the fact that the state has entered into an enterprise agreement with Microsoft to standardize, to consolidate servers, gain efficiencies over time. But there is a cost associated with that transition. Microsoft is here assisting us with that. As we evaluate the current infrastructure that's placed in the individual departments, we learn things, we learn about additional needs. And it's our best estimate here that we will need up to $2 million back to accomplish that transition smoothly with Microsoft. So that's one of our requests. I will, I think, significant request we wanted to discuss has to do with the OPA and Public Defender supplementals. Neither of the supplementals are funded in the current bill. In the PD's case, it was $217,000, and that, in the budget of their size, that is it's consequential, but it's not overwhelming. On the other hand, OPA has a $2.5 million supplemental that isn't funded, and frankly, that's about the cost of their budget for 1 month. And, you know, they literally would probably run out of money at the end of May if we don't do this. And so we would ask your consideration and rethinking that funding. And we've had some discussions here in the past, and I think we've even provided you with some charts to show the kind of trend that we've got here. And as you know, OPA gets assigned cases, and that's it. They don't have a choice of taking a case. And frankly, unlike the Department of Law, for example, they don't have a choice of settling a case. If the client doesn't want to settle, doesn't want a trial, law can choose to bring a case or not, but they really are stuck with the cases they get. The felony and child cases are up. I mean, the trend line, and you've seen this chart before, but this is 03 to 06, and it's just up and up and up. And so the reality is we can't allow us to get to a point where the attorneys are so overworked that two things will happen. One, they'll start leaving to go find a better job. And two, mistakes will be made. When mistakes are made, what happens is they get appealed, and then they get reversed, and then we start over, and it costs the system even more. What we want to do is to provide the best, most effective, most appropriate defense possible in child and criminal cases, and to do it most efficiently for the state. And I will say one thing about that. I want to thank the committee for funding the case management system for OPA, for the Office of Administrative Hearings, and for labor relations. It's something you've funded in the past. I get that backwards. PD is the one that doesn't have it. OPA has got it. And you funded it for OPA in the past, and I think that's going to allow us to increase our efficiencies, use the money better. But the reality is 06 has got a $2.5 million hole in it for OPA. And the last thing I'd leave with for you is there is I trust this is just a technical problem, but it's associated with the capitalization of the ISF, Information Services Fund. There needs to be an addition to actually put the $23.3 million of GF into the ISF fund, if I understand. Did I get that right?
That's correct. This is to fund the capital, the ETS capital request, the total.
So with that, okay. I thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Thank you very much for being here today. The court system?
Morning, Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Doug Woolover. I'm the administrative attorney for the Alaska court system. I just have one item I'd like to discuss with you today. A portion of this item was included in the governor's capital budget. Unfortunately, it's not in the current draft CS before you today. It's our number one priority, and that's $3.965 million for critical courtroom case management technology. This is a phase one of a two-phase project, and it comes in two parts. The first part, and the most critical for our needs at this time, is $1.95 million to replace our recording system. As you may know, Alaska is the only state that does not rely on stenographers. We use only recording equipment in all of our court proceedings based on what other states do and what other states pay for court stenographers. If we were to use them, we would need about 63 of them, and it would cost almost $4.5 million a year. The good thing is we don't spend $4.5 million a year on stenographers, but the bad part is that every 8 or 10 years we need to come before you and make a capital budget request for to upgrade our computer systems and our recording system. The recording systems in the courtroom are an integral part of our overall computer system, and as that system has advanced and improved over the years, our recording equipment needs to keep pace with it. We have compatibility problems and record retention problems, recording problems that develop as the two technologies become further and further apart. So what we really need is the $1.95 million to upgrade that recording system so that we keep an accurate record of everything that happens. Now, the good thing is that this is a little less than $2 million, which is about half of what it was to bring our recording system into the computer age, which was our last request. Now we're in the phase where we need to update every few years, every several years actually, the software itself, but we don't have to start over as we did before when we had nothing but tape recorders. The other part of our request is $1.3 million for an appellate case management system. Similarly to the recording system, the appellate case management system is becoming less and less compatible with the rest of our computer work. Upgrades are no longer available. The vendor no longer supports. It's a very old system, and that system no longer meets standards for security or compatibility, industry standards for normalization of data, and it's an old system. It needs to be updated, and those are my two requests.
Thank you. Are there any questions on the request? Okay, thank you. Thanks, Doug. Department of Fish and Game. Good morning, Commissioner Tom.
Good morning.
Welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Senators, I appreciate this opportunity. I will try to be very brief because I understand we realize how busy you are. I'm Makai Campbell, Commissioner of Alaska Department of Fish and Game. With me is Tom Lawson, our admin director. First off, I wanted to say we tried in putting our request together to present you with a very responsible request, and we appreciate your response to it. We do that very, very much so. I want to mention, though, two issues which are linked, which we've discussed briefly, Madam Chair. In the current budget before you, in the governor's budget, there was a request for $400,000 for Didson sonar. These are sonar units that are capable of counting fish much more accurately in obscured or cloudy waters. That item is not currently in the budget. It was zeroed because of CFEC funding receipt issues, which were the funding source, not because of any opposition that we're aware of to the projects. Also in the budget before you, on page 12, line 16, is a program, the Western Alaska Salmon Stock Identification Program. And that program, which had gone originally from $1.5 million to $500,000, is in this budget down to $200,000. We think this program is very important, but it is not a program that is easily scalable. And we are concerned that at the $200,000 level, what we will do is raise great expectations without the ability to fulfill those. Our suggestion and request to you, and this would not require any increase in funds in our portion of the budget, is that we take the $200,000 general fund that is currently in the budget for WASAP and move that to the Didson response. We can do two of the four units for Didson for that amount of money. We would ask that you retain the federal receipt authority for WASAP, and we will try to seek additional sources of funding elsewhere for WASAP to do that. We appreciate it. Your help and your work and your consideration of this issue.
Are there any questions? Okay, and you got another issue?
Those are the two issues combined.
Very good. Okay, those are the two. All right, just to switch that around.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Commissioner Tom. Department of Military and Veteran Affairs. Good morning.
Madam Chair, good morning. I'm Major General Craig Campbell, the Commissioner for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, and with me today I have John Kramer, my Director for Administrative Services. And not to be confused with the previous presenter named Campbell, but you know, it's a trend. I have one issue today that I would like to discuss with the committee, Madam Chair. The Governor's budget initially presented $7.5 million for the Youth Academy, for the Alaska Military Youth Academy. $7 million is authority for receipts from the federal government. We have a request in the federal side asking for $7 million. And $500,000 would be general funds from the state of Alaska. This money is not currently included in the version of the bill you have before you, and we're asking that it be reinstated. The $7.5 million is our is the governor's priority to look at expanding the Youth Academy into interior Alaska. We do not have a site selected yet. What we're looking at is finding a site. We're considering a few different locations, and this money, the $500,000 from the state, will get us in the planning side to be able to bring that to fruition. And the $7 million from federal receipts would be allowing us to do renovations, not new construction, but renovations to a facility once we find one. This is, as I mentioned, the governor's priority, and I think it is good for the youth of America and Alaska because this program has demonstrated its capability of bringing individuals who have dropped out of society back in as productive members. Okay. Madam Chair, that's all I have.
Could you refresh my memory on what that fund source is then and the out years? How does that?
Madam Chair, yes. In the out years of FY08, there will be a request coming for general funds of $5 million would be added to this should we find a location and receive the $7 million from the federal government that allows us to go with renovation. If we do not find a site, or if the site that we find does not receive the federal funding, we would not be coming forward for you for the additional funding. We can't expand unless we have a facility, and that's very dependent upon the federal dollars.
Okay. Now, is the $5 million, though, in the second year for running the facility? Is that going to be kind of the typical fee for the outreach?
Yes, the operating costs for the Youth Academy will increase in the out years when we have a second academy in interior Alaska. I'd like to point out two things about that, though. The first is that the budget that we already have established for the Youth Academy is written into the foundation formula. So as we bring in the students, that drives for the following year what we'll be receiving in receipts to the foundation formula under public education. The additional part that we ask for under general funds is what would normally be paid for by an organized borough or city in their local property tax. We ask for it through federal monies that we get as well as from assistance from the state. So yes, it would increase in the out years the operation and maintenance cost of the facility because we'd have two campuses, but as we've talked about before and what you gave us last year was an increase to put one additional platoon in, which you will see come to fruition this October when we do our graduation of a larger class. That drives a larger staff, and as we go to an interior campus, it's going to drive a second facility that has to be maintained. So the staffing size will go up and the costs will go up, but we will also be graduating, we're estimating now about 400 students a year as opposed to the 200 we've been traditionally doing.
Well, and the $5 million, say that is in GF, what kind of federal money does that attract?
Madam Chair, I don't have in front of me the entire federal budget. John, you may want to help me because each year
in the current at Fort Rich, what is the current match between GF and federal? That's all I was going for.
I'd have to get back with you on that, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
I'll get to the specifics instead of guessing at a percentage.
Thank you, Senator Bundy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It is unfortunate that this program is relatively expensive, but to share an experience I had that tells me it's also probably effective and maybe necessary. I went to one of the first graduations they had out there, and it was a nice graduation, fairly impressive. These young people seemed to have it together and were confident young people. And I happened to go to the men's room afterwards, and here are two of these young men that I would have probably maybe unfairly described as street punks. They were toughs, and they were hugging each other and high-fiving and saying, "We made it. We're not in jail, and we got our GED." And unfortunately, they probably would have been in jail, and they certainly wouldn't have had their GED. So it costs a lot of money, but at $135 a day to keep them in jail, it costs money too.
That's great. Nice comments, Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, as the general knows, I'm very much a supporter and would align myself with Senator Bundy's comments. I'm sure there's lots of those that, but it is very expensive, and it has to be. It's 24 hours. It's residential. It's intense, and so you know. I have to question, and don't tell the people in Fairbanks I said this, but I guess I just question why we would start down the path of having distributed effort across the state and not just concentrate our money and our efforts to just expand what we have so we can share economies of scale and kitchens and infirmaries and all those the overhead that goes with the 200 kids. I just don't, as much as I'd like to have this in my town or around my town, I just question why we start this. And we're a state that has 53 school districts, and I hope we never have another one. But we're starting here to now have districts of youth academies for a state that's 600,000 people. And so I really, General, with all due respect, I question why we're doing this. And I think we need, before we take this step, we really need to see what the benefit is going to be. And are we bursting at the seams in Anchorage to the point where we have to go somewhere else?
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, yes. Senator Wilkins, thank you. We have talked about this, and I do respect that opinion, and would like to offer a little perspective why I believe the interior is the right place to grow and the time is right. We are prohibited from building new construction, and at Camp Carroll right now in Anchorage, we are busting at the seams. The residential facility we operate there with the platoon we added is really stretched. I cannot go to 400 cadets at the existing facility. I'd have to build new buildings there, and I can't do that. So I need to find existing construction to utilize. Fairbanks may have some of that available. The second part is, 2 years ago, we added a recruiter to Fairbanks, and more than quadrupled the number of individuals that are coming to Anchorage to do the program now. One of the concerns we have that we think that has demonstrated is that there's an undertapped number of troubled youth in interior Alaska that would like to use that facility but aren't because it's in Anchorage. If you bring it to Fairbanks, you've moved a campus further north, closer to their families and their support groups for after action when they finally graduate. And we think that will add a certain number that will now apply and be eligible and capable of going through the academy. Today, we just can't get to because it's in Anchorage. I certainly am speculating, but I am speculating based on the increase we had with the recruiter when we added the recruiter, the number of troubled youth we have in Alaska that really demographically shows we could serve 400 a year. I'm not concerned about reaching that number, but wanted to make sure that we do it properly across the state and interior Alaska, and not just Fairbanks. I'm not really talking about Fairbanks as much as a lot of communities around Fairbanks that could utilize a facility closer to home. Because a lot of what we do in the Youth Academy is mentorship and after action. After they graduate, are they successful? We have about a 95% success rate with individuals today that graduate. And we believe that in the interior Alaska area, the students and the youth there deserve the same opportunity. And right now, I think there is a somewhat negative aspect to it, having to go to Anchorage and go to a place that is busting at the seams. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thanks. Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you. I identify with former remarks about your success. It has been represented to me that this might be the best program like this in the country. Is that an exaggeration?
Through the chair, Madam Chair, Senator Dyson, it is one of the best in the country. We are consistently receiving national awards. About 6 weeks ago, I was back in Washington. We received the Award of Excellence for Mentoring, which is the after action, taking care of the graduates. I could get you a separate list of the awards, but I can tell you that with absolute certainty that we have one of the finest organizations graduating some of the finest individuals with the highest success rate in the United States.
That's wonderful. Thank you, Senator Dyson.
Could people attack that by saying that you're starting out with a better crowd?
Through the chair, Senator Dyson, I don't know what some of those who would want to criticize that type of success might say. I think that what we have is it's challenged youth in Alaska. Again, small population, large geographical area. We have drug problems. We have gang problems. We have a lot of issues. And our troubled youth are just like the troubled youth in other parts of the country. They've dropped out of school. They've probably had problems with their family. They may have gotten in trouble with the law. They may be on drugs. They have all the same characteristics of the senior teens and lower 20s have across America. I think what you see in our youth academy, because of its military structure and the dedication of the staff and the close relationship, Alaska having a small population is a small family. So the follow-on and close relationship after they graduate is helping us get that higher success rate.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are there any other questions or comments? Thank you very much for being here.
Madam Chair, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. The Departments of Public Safety, Revenue, and Health and Social Services have called in and said thank you for a job well done, and we will not be testifying. So that it brings us to a close. Okay. Tomorrow morning, Senate Bill 231 is scheduled to be heard at 9 a.m. There will not be any testimony at the morning meeting. We will adopt a new Senate committee substitute in the morning and prepare for public testimony beginning at 5 p.m. However, you will notice that there are some bills scheduled for tomorrow morning, some Senate bills that need to get passed over to the House. And so with that, we adjourn until tomorrow. Senator Dyson.
I'm sorry. We will be meeting at 5 tomorrow night. Is that what you said?